Hello and welcome to episode 114 of the Drive the Green podcast. I'm your host, Matty B, joined once again by Bronel and Harv. The boys are back in town for this episode. We are back in studio for the first time in six episodes, I believe it is.
Something like that.
So we're all here. We're all in the studio. The sound is back. Thank you to all the listeners who have bared with us through the Zoom. I don't want to call it fiasco, but...
Zoom era?
Yeah. Sound wasn't the best, so you may notice a drastic improvement in sound quality for these.
Except now I got to get used to talking into a mic again, so bear with that.
On this episode, we have Team Canada Olympic and amateur coach Derek Ingram, head coach Derek Ingram. We also are going to recap the driving relief match between Ricky and Wolfman versus Rory and DJ, which was... had some hits, had some misses. We're going to get into all of that. And then Quick Hits returns for a few news items. But before we get into all of that, we want to thank our sponsor, Player Golf, PLYRGolf.com. Use the promo code DRIVETHEGREEN for 20% off your order. We're also a member of the Saskatchewan Podcast Network, proudly presented by Kinexus. As I mentioned, we're going to get into Ingram, but the boys have had an opportunity to finally hit the course. Our local course opened this past Friday. We've played two rounds, including just before we got to studio here today. Mixed results, I guess, is the way to put it.
Yeah.
I mean, not for you, Bronel. Bronel doesn't even want to talk about
consistent. Guy's consistent this year.
Yeah, just a consistently shitty player now. 221 days, by the way, since our last round in the fall last year.
Yeah.
Which is insane to think
about. When you think about it. And realistically, it's only, what, 30 days longer than it should have been? So every year we're doing 200 days?
Well, it's six on, six off is pretty much what it is. 180 on, 180 off. If you go by that 30-day rule, pretty close to that.
Yeah. Nice but to get down somewhere warm.
It's
south for a couple rounds, but.
Like, for our American listeners, when they hear that we actually went 221 days just in season. So let's say you even had a winter getaway to somewhere warm. Just the fact that the time up here is 221 days in between seasons. Let's say just the normal one's 190.
Yeah.
Like, that's insane that we love golf so much and can't play it for half the year.
And I think I hit four shots in those 221 days at your range beside your house?
Other than
indoor.
Simulator.
We got and some indoor before COVID. Right. Before COVID simulator, shut us down, right. We had some indoor rounds in there. So we swung some golf clubs.
Right. I completely forgot about those.
Yeah. So your 221's like thrown out the window.
Yeah.
you just suck because
he said 221 without a round, not without swinging a club. So
yeah.
Right.
But the boys, I got off to a hot start and then came back down to earth today. Bronel's been, by your standards, pretty terrible to start the year. And Harv was not great and then had a pretty good round today, cashed in three birdies. So,
yeah, we've figured out putting a little bit.
There's
with
the some new adjustments to be made.
Yeah.
First of all, I need to hit the range.
Yes. So,
second of all, the wind stunk today.
You got to take it with a grain
of salt. That's a few shots there. But the biggest thing for me is putting with the pins in. I can't get used to it yet.
There was a couple today when they were like when the pin was just like that one hole five where it has the super high pin, and the wind was howling and it's just
bending,
rattling in there. Like, how do you putt? How are you supposed to play golf with that going on?
That sound.
And I don't mind it on the long putts. It's the 5 to 10 feet
that's
just weirds me out. You push so
three footers
or
whatever.
So many putts today.
Yeah, I don't know.
No, you're pushing those. Pushing, right?
No, pulling.
Or
I'm a left-handed golfer.
Oh, you're left-handed, yeah. I forgot about that.
I just got to say that after the
everything
round...
missing right.
After the round, I threw on my Player Golf recovery jacket. And
how you feeling?
I just feel like I'm recovered. I'm recovered already. Like, the name fits.
Yeah. Oh, man, did I have some recovering to do after our Friday round where I carried my clubs. Like,
that was foolish.
No wonder DJ doesn't do it. It stinks.
It's a bad experience. So luckily for me, I wasn't so foolish as to do that. I still took the cart.
What's with that thing out there that it's like you're a wimp if you use a push cart? Like
it is a bit of a weird stereotype.
I mean, if you're 20 years old, maybe, but when you're 30, I'm 35 now. Like,
I'm gonna use a push cart.
Yeah,
and let's not get over the fact that they're pretty sick now. Like, it's like, yeah, you're barely pushing it.
Yeah.
Because the wheels are so good and big, and it's just, you barely even notice that you're doing it. You're just walking.
I have no problem with a push cart. When I was a junior member at Riverside, you got free rickshaws. It took them all the time.
Yeah.
Like, you're just walking around 36 holes a day. Why would I carry my bag for that?
Yeah. I agree. And, I mean, I've noticed a lot of guys at our club even that have historically driven carts that are walking because, A, they can only play one round a day because of more strict rules in place. So there's no real... Our course, we've talked about this many times, is well known for its roguing and guys just hopping from hole to hole, and you just can't do that now because they're being a lot more strict. So a lot more people walking. Our round today, we finished in under 4 hours. Like, yeah, very well spaced.
Even waiting.
I love it.
Like, Friday, barely. We rarely waited, and then today we were actually waiting, and it was still sub four hours.
Yeah,
so.
I liked it. And, I mean, obviously you're knocking off a couple tee times an hour, a few tee times an hour, so the courses are going to feel it a little bit, especially with no pro shops and things like that, but I really enjoyed it.
But here's the thing that I still don't understand about Brownell is, I mean, it wouldn't have worked today because we only had the one cart, but when there's two carts... Just throw your bag on one of those carts. Walking without a bag, pushing or carrying it, is just enjoyable.
I think liberating might be the word you're looking
for. That's the exact word I'm looking for. Like, you just kind of grab your club. If you're trying to save time, you just saunter up the fairway.
Yeah, you strapped your bag onto my cart.
Yeah.
And you just take a couple clubs and walk to your ball. And then when you hit a good approach shot, you just grab your putter and just walk up there.
Yeah, like... It almost makes you feel like you're a pro. Like, that's what they do. I mean, I'm not a pro. I'm not saying that by any stretch of the means, but just casually sauntering up a fairway is one of the most enjoyable things in life right now for me.
Yep.
I'm not sure to tie this all into the count, because we'll get into our weeks. Our weeks was pretty much golf.
Yeah,
so.
That was
yep.
But to tie this into the count, I golfed 36 holes in 4 days, I guess, and had 3 beers.
On the course?
Yeah. I didn't have a single one today, and I had 3 on Friday.
Oh, did you?
So, that being said, I made up for it by having just 4 random ones on Saturday. So, the count, as of the 18th of May when we're taping this, is at 31 for May.
And that brings the total to?
Total for the year? Let me
200
just,
and
let
me check the tally.
Carry the one.
Four. It's got to be closing. It was 100.
It was 176 at the end of April. So 31, 207.
Yeah.
Okay.
207.
It's not
awful.
It's going down, but.
But summer's coming now.
Summer's coming and golf is coming. Yeah. Like, for me to not have at least 2 per side is.
Yeah.
Is something.
Well, so, you had the boy with you today.
I did have a little man with me today who's getting better.
Yep.
He had the best shot of the day on the last hole of the day.
So
he just showed us right up.
Yeah, dad brag time. Just to tie this all to what happened, we got a trampoline recently, and he had his first experience with the double bounce. So a neighbor kid was over and double bounced him super high. I mean, he's 6. And fell pretty hard on his ankle. So he's been limping around for a couple of days. So he was saying all day. I think it's because when you guys are there, he gets a little uncomfortable. But he was saying he didn't want to hit because his ankle was sore. And then he teed off from the tips with us. 168 was 18.
Yep.
And he was just short of the green in 2. I mean, so I could be somewhat proud of that. His main shot was from the reds, which was about 118.
Yep.
So we almost put it on from 118.
Yep.
So I can be happy with that.
Absolutely.
I mean, granted, Tiger Woods, I think, had his first ace by the time he was 6, but
whatever.
I'm not gonna say I was the one who teed his ball up on that shot and not you, but
somebody did.
Did you tee it down lower? Because I
he
yells at me if it's not high enough. So maybe he just didn't have the heart to tell you to tee it up higher.
Because
he always gets under everything with that little 3-wood. All right, well, let's get into recapping driving relief. Speaking of carrying bags, the match before the match between Rory, DJ, Ricky, and Wolf happened yesterday. So A lot of people excited about this. Our first opportunity to watch some live golf. I mean, I had a chance to watch most of it. There's a few takeaways I had. The first of which is, like I said, a lot of people were excited for live golf. It didn't really feel, it's just the thought that you knew it was live, but that could have been taped months ago. Like, it had no actual feel of live golf.
No.
It was a little bit odd there, and again, the trash talk wasn't there. It was good because it was live, but it wasn't awesome.
It was better. I thought it was better, but the interaction between them was better than the first two matches.
Yep.
But the announcing was terrible.
Like, I heard Bill Murray was brutal.
Like, Tirico was not the guy to put on that, I thought. And then when they had Bill Murray in there, I don't even know if he knew where he was. Like, he was doing a pretty good Clint Eastwood impression there.
And then they got Trump on. It was almost overproduced. It should have just been more about the guys on the golf course, and they like had so many graphics and so many different like bits and interviews. It just cut away from shots. Like, it was just overproduced.
The thing with Bill Murray, they cut to like a picture in picture or a screen, and
it was terrible.
And then like Matt Wolf was chipping and he flubbed the chip shot and you couldn't even see it because the two screens were blocking the shot.
Yeah.
Was Ricky's shirt a graphic too, or was that a real shirt?
It made the screen blurry at times.
You know who had the biggest rust? Whoever was working the shot tracer.
Oh yeah, because
half of them didn't register, or they were late. The one they showed Wolf, they're like, yeah, that's the tracer showing it right up the right side of the fairway. Went in the trees, went in the bush. Like, he lost that ball, I think. Like, I think he just picked it up.
Yeah.
One of the most enjoyable parts of that is you got to see every single shot of theirs, and so you get to see all of the bad ones.
Yeah. And which aren't really that bad.
There was some, DJ hit some bad shots.
Well, he also gave zero fucks out there.
Oh,
zero.
Yeah. He was hitting shots when guys were like walking up to mark their balls and stuff, and he's just like hitting it. And
it was like a running joke on Twitter, his pace of play. Like, there was one picture that they took of Wolf trying to hit an approach shot, and DJ's like up beside the green, like getting ready to mark his ball.
Yeah, he probably wanted to get through the round because he didn't know how to carry his clubs.
Yeah, I liked when he walked off the tee and said, "Oh, whoops, forgot my clubs."
Yeah, well, that one on eight on the playoff when he, which is the one that a lot of people said he forgot his clubs on. All the other guys walked off the tee without their clubs, but someone came to the fence and said that they put their bags down at a different spot. So kind of one of those you never really know type things. But anyway, the match itself was pretty good. Wolf was, a lot of people believed that he was out of his league being in that. I mean, he wasn't from a driving perspective. He won the long drive, I think, twice.
Both holes, yeah.
Both holes. But he didn't play very well other than that. Like, missed a ton of birdies.
I was going to say, he was a little bit out of his league there.
He had the least experience by far on that course, too.
Yeah.
Is what they.
But, like, the long drive thing, like, he flew Rory's ball the one time.
Yeah.
On 14 or whatever it was.
He was hitting in a mile, but that was all Ricky. Like, what did Ricky have? Four straight birdies at one point.
He had
won all their holes. Wolf was missing birdie putts left and right. So he's putting himself in position, but he just couldn't finish.
And it also looked bad, too, because every birdie they made, extra money went in the pot, right? So guys were still putting out when someone was already in for birdie, and they were just ramming them to try and take away the break and, like, missing putts by, like, 8 to 10 feet.
Oh, yeah. Blown away by, I saw that.
Yeah, and Ricky and Wolf actually won match play. They just didn't win skins.
Right.
So
I wonder how many viewers they lost that were mad that they were wearing shorts instead of pants.
I actually, that was taking a lot of heat on Twitter that they were wearing shorts. Cause people,
was it?
Someone said, like, this just shows, like, that they can wear shorts on the PGA Tour. And a lot of guys, traditionalists, came and said, you know, you don't see Ben Hogan wearing shorts on the golf course and all this old school stuff of wearing trousers and stuff. Friend of the pod, Double D, believes that you should be wearing trousers. I like shorts.
I don't think it'll ever happen where they can wear shorts in a tournament, but I had no issues with
it. Why not?
Yeah.
I just don't think it'll. I don't think it'll ever get there. And for no reason other than maybe call it
ice
tradition.
Ice cold take coming. Similar to let's compare it to baseball. They don't get to play baseball in shorts. I understand it's an ice cold take because they slide.
Yeah,
but I'm just saying take. It's the same.
Could you imagine someone playing baseball in shorts?
Basketball in pants.
Hey.
I'm just saying if it's done that way forever, why would they change it?
Yeah,
just because it's more comfortable.
Well, they change equipment in all their sports.
Football quarterbacks get to wear shorts. Is that better? Is that a better one?
The punters.
I mean, those guys pretty much don't wear any leg pads anyway. They might as well be wearing shorts.
Right.
That's true. But maybe baseball
was a bad ice cold, bad take.
I don't see it happening, especially when like all of them kind of look good, other than Ricky's shirt, and DJ doesn't have the same swagger in shorts. It just ain't there for me.
Yeah,
and also, those were tight shorts.
Yeah, he's got to wear a couple layers of spandex there because he's flirting with disaster wearing shorts, if you know what I'm saying. But also, one of my favorite things about golf is, this is going to be weird, but I always wonder what their calves look like. And just because we talk about Phil and having huge calves, but I was completely caught off guard with how big Ricky's calves were.
Yeah.
Like Ricky's got big legs and Matthew Wolf has cankles.
Yeah. Compared to like Rory and DJ who don't have much going on there in the calf region.
Yeah. But it was just so weird to see, the lower leg of these guys. I was completely caught off guard by Ricky's calves.
That's why I wore pants on Friday for our match.
That's why.
Yeah.
Good point. I wore shorts both days.
Those white legs.
I may have trapped you there because I said I was wearing pants for sure, and then I showed up in shorts.
Yeah,
wasn't sure if you were going to be thrown off by that or not.
Yeah, that's why. Shot 85.
Circling back to something I said before when this match first came out, I still don't think Ricky and Matt Wolf were the first two guys they asked for this. I still think it was going to be Day and Rom, and they just didn't show up.
Day tweeted out like "Good luck today, guys," or something, or that he was watching.
Well,
but maybe they had DJ and Rory.
I also heard
as
that
a
it
team,
was...
and then it's some other guys, and then they backed out, and they're like, "Oh, we already had DJ and Rory paired."
I also heard that it was more to do with geographical.
I guess yeah,
like, those guys are there. They live close to Seminole,
right?
So Rom might be in Arizona or wherever, and they just didn't want those guys to travel to play it. So it's four
right.
guys that are right at Seminole. Who's the best guy or the most applicable to it? And they probably went with the OK State.
And they had to be
connection.
Tailor-made guys.
They had to be tailor-made guys, which is hilarious because right off the first tee, Ricky goes rolling off with his giant Cobra bag. So it's the three guys in front of him. Ricky's at the back. So the camera's right on Ricky. He's got his Cobra bag right there. He's wearing nothing tailor-made except for his ball.
And glove.
And glove.
When's that quarterback match coming up?
Next Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
So
here's one thing you guys will probably...
You mean the Tiger Phil match or the quarterback one?
When's that Brady Manning match? Here's one thing I'm sure you guys will rake me over the coals for. Seminole? Me.
I didn't... A lot of people were saying that.
Yeah, like...
Like, it's not that... It's completely changed. Was it Tiger that you posted that Tiger on Seminole in like 1999 is like changed to a driver wedge course?
He just casually went out there and shot 62.
Yeah, like
and that's what
exactly
it
what it was. It was driver wedge, and they were talking about. I saw someone post on Twitter of 16. They're like, do you think this was designed as a drivable par 4? No, that's not how, because they were all hitting driver going for the green. It's like, no, this is not how this course was designed.
Well, and they said they took out a bunch of trees in the like waste areas, so why not? Cut every single corner you can.
Yeah, so it looks nice.
Yeah.
Absolutely, but didn't look hard.
No.
The way that they were playing it, I bet you for an average golfer, you go there and you're just in awe and it's
awesome. I mean, the greens were outrageously fast and
that's
whatnot.
That's the tough part, yeah.
Well, that's where they said that's the only way you can make it hard.
If it's
driver wedge, the only chance you have of people not shooting 58 is to make the greens super hard.
And I think it like almost lots of the guys were like, I don't want to say shocked, but like maybe shock's the word, that their ball wasn't, like, they were hitting the shots and then they weren't spinning back. Like, I don't know if it was they just firmed up the greens that much. Yeah. But, like, Rory hit one and it, like, bounced right past the pin and he's like, come on back. And it just didn't. It yeah. just stayed 12 feet past the hole.
I think, I think overall for entertainment value, it did what it was supposed to do. But I can see how it, like, again,
it got like something like 2.4 million people watched it. Yeah. So
I think everyone was just itching for live. But again, like I said at the start, that had the same type of feel as something that happened months ago and they were just re-airing it. Like, it wasn't.
I'd still rank it the best of these matches so far.
For sure. I'll give you that.
Yep. Sure.
They're still tweaking it. I think they need to do these every year and they'll get there and yeah.
Yeah.
I don't like the team aspect of it. I'd rather four guys playing their own against each other in a skins game.
Changing it up. Like, I wouldn't mind seeing that as an alternate shot thing.
Yeah.
Because there was a ton of carries.
I wouldn't mind seeing it as like a four-man like match play tournament. They play 36 holes. Two guys versus each other. Winners go on to play each other. The other guy, all for charity, so the other match still counts.
You just got to get someone that actually wants to play 36. DJ didn't even want to play 18.
Yeah, that's true. But yeah. I think that would be cool to watch.
Yeah.
Two-man scramble would be all right, too.
Yeah, it was pretty good. All right, should we get into birthdays before we get into quick hits?
Yeah, sure. I didn't think there was any aces this week in the match.
There was no aces in that.
Okay, shots of the week?
Shots of the week.
There's only really
one. Throwing out a shot on 13 today in our weekly game.
So far left is right.
Yeah, shit, he stole the words out of my mouth. It was the furthest left I've ever seen a ball hit. Yeah. That's it. On a direct line.
Blocked. Just straight blocked.
Into the wind did not help.
No banana land crazy slice or anything. You just hit it.
No.
And you hit it decent. It just went in a wrong direction.
Yeah, it went 230 yards straight left into the wind, which is a decent drive.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. All right, birthdays?
Well, the big one this week, which there was a cool little video that surfaced on Twitter that friend of the pod, Bob Weeks, put together, I think, or got them together. But Mike Weir turned 50 years old.
Yeah, happy birthday, Mike.
That's
Tom Cochran.
Yeah, go ahead.
Gretzky.
There's lots of people. They put together a Zoom,
yes. Ernie Els, who may have been a little intoxicated. I don't know, but that guy.
Why not? Why wouldn't he be?
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know, but I was when he did it, he's like, Mike, it's Ernie, yeah? And I just started laughing. Like, of course he knows who you are.
But yeah, so he's 50 now, so he can play on the Champions Tour.
And that's big because he's basically committed to that Alberta
Calgary Champions. Shaw Classic.
Yeah, so.
Yep. Another guy that turned 50, Jim Furyk, also turned 50.
And which is funny that for Mike, because it's like, shit, now I got to face Furyk too.
Yeah.
Like, he was probably excited. And I mean, Phil's 49, 48.
49, yeah, I think.
So Phil's there next year. Like, that window's small for some of those
Phil's
guys.
Phil's going to play on tour as long as he can. Just but like...
I would just be like, you know, I'm going to take an off week, and my off weeks are the 3-round no-cut senior tournaments.
I'm not sure if Furyk goes to the Champions Tour. I don't know.
I don't think he'll go right away, similar to Phil, but you know Mike's going.
Who's had the better career, Jim Furyk or Mike Weir?
Furyk.
It's got to be close.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He doesn't have like a boatload of wins.
Got quite a few.
Yeah. Spoiler, well, not a spoiler, but teaser. We asked, getting into the Derek Ingram interview, if you'd rather be Mike Weir or Sidney Crosby. Just teaser to see what one he picked.
Yeah. Golf personality Blair O'Neill also had a birthday. And the last one,
Chrome's mom.
Yeah. Last but not least, the only 3-time guest of our pod, the ultimate friend of the pod, Roger Sloan.
Roger turned what? Born in 87, I'm going to say.
Yeah, I actually don't even know what
was his age. Tags on social media are Sloan 87, so I'm just going to assume that he picked his birth year.
Big Cros guy.
Or he's a diehard Crosby fan. Yeah. So that's a Flames guy. So happy 33rd birthday.
Yeah. Apologies to any birthdays that I missed. And we're getting into quick hits.
Quick hit time. You're running the show.
All right. We just talked about Phil. He's joining Michael Jordan's course. Harv?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I'm that course has just moved to like maybe top three on my bucket list just from seeing the pictures of it. I don't know how you become a member there, but I know I'll never get a play.
Isn't that the place where Michael Jordan has to invite you to be a member?
I think that's what it is, yeah. Or he has a say in it. Yeah. I don't know exactly, but yeah, Phil's getting in. So.
Congrats to Phil.
Yeah.
Next.
Gambling.
There you go.
Yeah.
Michael wants him there to gamble.
Yeah.
Next.
Brooks Koepka doesn't want to play Ryder Cup without no fans. Defends himself on Twitter.
So, tying this before Harv goes on his Koepka rant, I can see his face getting red. His ears are starting to steam.
That's just
one of the
today.
One of the takeaways from the driving relief match was how some people said, this is what you want to see with golf with no fans. And I don't agree with that at all because... It would be completely different in a tournament, I think.
Yeah.
Completely different feel, production value, all that stuff. I can see where he's coming from because there was no emotion or anything like that. But again, it wasn't even remotely close to what the Ryder Cup is or any tournament. I think you have to at least let a couple tournaments happen with no fans before you say that the Ryder Cup has to happen with or without fans. You need to give me a sample size, not a...
I'll get into the Brooks Koepka stuff because I got a lot to say about that guy. But I think the Ryder Cup is the perfect event to have with no fans. Like those guys, like you said, this was just like a charity. Mm-hmm. DJ didn't want to be there. Rory was not taking it seriously.
Nope.
Ricky was being Ricky.
The
and,
best.
And
I love Ricky.
Okay. And Matt Wolf was just kind of happy to be there kind of guy.
Yep.
But in the Ryder Cup, like, they legitimately hate each other for a week. Like, could you imagine singles?
You should be able to feel it a little bit more.
Singles on Sunday, even with fans or without fans, like the American who's going to end up playing Poulter when Poulter is probably still fist pumping, he's going to be pissed. Like, you're going to be able to feel the heat and the animosity.
I could give you, I kind of agree with you there that you might be able to actually feel the tent. And because there's only going to be like, the six camera crew people following, whatever. So it's the two players, their caddies, and maybe six other people on every other hole. Like, that would be pretty intense. I don't know. They obviously wouldn't make them mic them up, but...
But still,
it could
like...
It would be pretty good.
And why not maybe you do mic them up?
Mm. There's definite potential in it. But again, I think you just gotta... You gotta have a tournament here and see what it's like with no fans. If they have enough camera crew available, I don't think it's going to be all that much different.
Yeah.
And anyways, back to Brooks, like, just shut up, man. Like, just, like you said before, give it a chance to see what an actual tournament feels like, not an exhibition thing or a charity event. Like, you don't even know how it's going to feel. Like, he's like, we only get amped up when the fans are there. That's why we play, and that's the pressure we feel, and that's why we're... pros because we can handle that pressure. Like, you're telling me,
okay,
with the Ryder Cup on the line, there's not going to be pressure there with no fans?
Oh yeah, there is.
Yeah, like you got a putt to get a half point when you're down. You're gonna get amped up for that.
Yeah,
like, yeah. I'm having the hardest time trying to figure out if he's doing it on, like, if it's an act or not.
Well, like, just control job. And how he was going back and forth with that guy on Twitter about how it's not the same. Like, it's not the same. You basically saying you guys pay to watch me and all this stuff. Like,
yeah, it's one big work.
Just shut up.
Yeah.
Hey, Harv, it's a big work.
Could be. Absolutely.
I mean,
kayfabe.
Obviously, we want fans to be there because we're used to that. And that's, you know, it makes golf a little bit better, probably. But there's no way that golf will suck without fans.
Yeah, you can't tell. Like,
it's
the
one of
ratings are going to be outrageous for a no fan major, a no fan Ryder Cup. Like, guys are, you're still going to be watching. You're still going to be yelling at the TV if something big happens.
I would put it in the same category as MMA right now. It is only marginally better with fans.
Yeah, but WWE is. 50 times better with fans. And I don't even like WWE.
Yes.
But without it, wrestling is I can't watch it.
Wrestling is tough without fans.
It's too much.
But even like, when we get into baseball, if we get into baseball, if we go down the basketball route, that type of stuff, it's going to be tough to watch. Basketball actually might not be that bad because there's some trash talking going on. But like baseball without fans is not going to be good.
No, I would say baseball and basketball are going to be the worst.
Football will be the absolute worst.
Football will be worse just from a home field advantage perspective.
Yeah.
So it'll be tough. It'll be easier for visiting teams.
But it'll look stupid.
I think baseball's not fantastic without fans.
Yeah.
As I guess I should clarify, if they're still going to have like the music in between and the announcers and stuff. So you can have a bunch of... like just play that in between every pitch.
Yeah, you don't need.
You'll be like people are there.
You don't need the people hammering on their
thighs. You just need the PA guy.
Yeah.
And basketball will be played with music on all the time. So there's ways to get around this.
Plus, you'll be able to hear all the Red Sox cheat with no fans there.
fastball. next. Oh, that was not a quick hit.
No, that should have been in the news, but whatever. Speaking of. Golf events being different. The U.S. Open qualifying canceled in totality.
Yeah, so what is that, 30 spots, I think, they lose? So the U.S. Open is entirely invitation now.
Yep.
Which, whatever.
It's going to have a bit of a different feel, but not crazy.
I mean,
crazy.
The U.S. Open in its entirety is the fact that there's open qualifying.
Yeah, so absolutely.
Like,
but
it's like
at the same
exact
time,
opposite.
Those people who qualify... Who cares? They're not like the low amateur is probably they're
they
still gonna
care.
Invite
That's
that
it,
guy.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, Roy McAvoy says hi, but whatever.
Yeah, exactly. This isn't Tin Cup. This is
there's only a mitt full of guys that make the cut that qualify.
Yeah, and the U.S. Open's what like they say, like even Roger Sloan, he was on a couple weeks ago, said there's only maybe 40 guys who can win the Masters, anytime, and then 20 of them aren't playing well, so there's really 20 guys. Like, the U.S. Open's even less than that because it's just they make it so tough that it's like 10 guys got a chance to win this thing.
Yeah, I think it's more of the sting in that is all of the qualifying tournaments, like all of the prestige in winning the qualifiers and moving through the qualifiers.
Yeah.
Like, but it's just like the stages of U.S. Open qualifying.
But that's gone by the wayside, too, because it's just... Pros who don't get in on their own now just go into that and mop everyone and get in.
Well, last year before the Canadian Open, they were running qualifiers right before the Monday before the tournament. And like Joel Damon and those guys were all playing. It's like, which one are you going to play in that has the weakest field?
Yeah, exactly. Like it'd be one thing if it was like how it used to be where a good amateur or whatever won his way through or even Tin Cup. Style movie if Brona wants to get hung up on that, but
I don't
but that's not anymore. It's exactly what you said. The guys who don't make it on their own merit just go down and pick one that has an easy field and then they get in.
Yeah.
Next.
And then they run it. Yeah. Then they run into another guy who thought it was an easy field. It turns out there's five.
I'm not faulting them for doing that because it's the system, but it's not what it was originally designed for.
No. Next.
All right. CT Pan, who was the guy that withdrew from the Players, has a different perspective now. He's kind of more okay with it reopening?
Yeah, he kind of said, I think he said that they're...
Well, I think this is the reason why he pulled out of the Players, because they didn't get rid of the fans. I think he would have played in the Players if they said no fans.
Well, he said he didn't. He pulled out of the Players because he's obviously from Taiwan or Chinese Taipei or something like that, where it was a bigger deal at the time. Mm-hmm. And he just kind of said that he felt that he was ahead of the game and just felt for safety reasons he should have pulled out.
He's ahead of the game by one day.
Yeah.
He said he knew more than everyone else, basically.
Yeah. But
yeah, one day. Next.
We talked about 2K coming out with his new game. We didn't have a cover athlete, but now we do. Justin Thomas.
Justin Thomas, cover athlete. I'm excited for this game. Unfortunately for you, you went out and bought the golf club.
Yeah, but I only paid $20 for it.
Yeah, so that's positive.
Yeah.
This game probably will get me to buy a console now. Because I was thinking about buying a console for the golf game or the golf club. But now that there's a new game, I think I'm going to buy a console.
Yeah.
But I have to because I have to be on this. I have to play it.
the golf club or what's it called? The golf pro?
The golf club 2019. Yeah.
Those guys must be pissed off. Yeah. Because it's essentially the same game. You can design your own courses.
You can on this one?
Yeah.
Yeah, it is the same game pretty much.
And the graphics are pretty much the same too. Yeah. Well, I said it.
But the graphics don't look... That video that they posted of this thing, that don't look great. Like, that did not look like Justin Thomas.
Let's put it this way. All they needed to do was just create a game.
Yeah.
Like, that's it.
I just can't believe they got rid of it to begin with. Like,
yeah.
You put out FIFA and NHL that are the exact same every single year.
It's just like the cult classic NCAA football. Like, that was the best game ever, and then they just stopped making it. 2014, I think it ended.
Yep.
Yeah.
Like, just make a golf game. Yeah. Now they have one, and everyone's going to play it. It's going to get me to buy a console just to play it.
And so it's not, I don't think, like, they don't change the courses up that much. Like, maybe they add one, maybe they take one away.
Idea segment, there will be a Drive the Green Listener League.
Ooh.
That's a good one.
We'll create one. All the listeners. Might even be for side bets. We'll see. For player gear.
I'm not in otherwise.
Next.
Last one here, probably the best feel-good story of the week. U.S. Army veteran, a 60-year-old guy in Arizona, won a golf event using only a putter.
Like, what?
Tee shots, like, second shots.
Do we know what he shot?
He shot an 84 and won. So the competition might have been...
Yeah. I mean, I imagine that's
84 with a putter is pretty good.
I mean, I shot 84 today, so...
That's an age bracket tournament that he won. Like, he won his age bracket. He didn't win the whole from thing with an 84.
From some set of middle tees.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But that... Like, 5,800 yards. 5,800 yards.
That got me thinking, what club would you guys choose...
7-iron.
And what would you shoot? If you could
our club?
Local course, one club, what would you shoot?
I might have to put this to the test, but just the way that I've been playing, well, today, and depending on what direction the wind is, because there's always wind here, with a 7-iron, I know for a fact I could shoot under 100. I'm just debating if I want to put my name to under 90.
Okay.
No, I don't think I could shoot under 90. I'd probably choose a 6-iron personally, but
yeah, it's got to be
something. I'm breaking 90.
It's got to be something you can get distance
can barely
with.
Break
that you
90
can chip
with all my clubs.
Yeah, but that's what I think the beauty of this is, is by taking driver out of the bag, you've probably added 3 shots.
Yeah, I mean,
I think you just play it completely differently if you have that.
Last year in September, when I was shooting high mid 70s every round, maybe I could take a 6-iron out and shoot 89, but I don't. Not right now.
This is the beauty of also being members at this course, is that we could just kill a round by doing this.
Yeah, we could. We
6 should iron, be doing 7-iron. What's yours, Arv?
We should be doing more content pieces like this.
Yes. What's yours?
I'm in between 6 and 7. I don't know. One of those two.
Like, I was even going to go 5 just so it's, you know, it's got a little bit more of a face to putt with, but I think I could still get that out of 7.
No, I...
You know what? 7, I might have to go 6 too. Then I got the cavity back.
Oh, right. You got the...
I got the
split.
Hybrid set.
I think I'd go 7 just because, like, I don't know. Hole 2. I'm just thinking hole 2. Like, that's a tough shot with a
6-iron.
With a 6-iron. I mean, it's one
seven
club, but it just feels it's a confidence thing that you could maybe
pitch
a 7-iron opposed to a 6-iron.
And I think I'm going the opposite way for that reason, because I'll go 6 because I pretty much use the 6 on most of the par 3s, 3 of the 5 par 3s that we have anyway. I'm pretty close to a 6.
Yep.
So I'm no difference there, and it gets me a little bit of distance on par 5s.
Maybe we just kill 9 holes.
I don't think you guys realize how hard chipping would be, like touch shots around the green. Like bump and runs, sure. But when you're short-sighted, what are you going to do?
Open that bad boy up and see what happens.
Smack it to the other side and get a better angle. Just kill a shot. Oh, I'm short-sighted. Well, here you go. I'm going over, and I'm coming back.
Yeah.
So, all right, should we get into the Derek Ingram interview?
Let's do it.
All right, Team Canada, Olympic and amateur coach Derek Ingram joined us for a really good chat here, 45 minutes of laughs and good stories and a few tips for the amateurs.
Very good tips.
Slugs like ourselves. So enjoy that, and we'll be back after to recap and send us into episode 115 next week. Enjoy.
All right, Matty B with Drive the Green Golf. I'm here with Harvin Bronell, as always. Today on the show, we have Team Canada coach Derek Ingram at D Ingram Golf on Twitter and Instagram. Thanks for joining us, Derek.
Hey, thanks for having me, guys. Fired up about it.
Yes. So, as I mentioned, you are the Team Canada Olympic amateur coach. We just wanted to, I think you could describe your accolades a little bit better than we can. I know we don't want to pump your tires too much, and that's your job to do it. So you take the pump tires. You've earned it.
Boys, I'm from Manitoba. I couldn't be any further away from tire pumping. isn't that reserved for places much more east of Manitoba? Anyway, I coach our national amateur team and our young pro squad in Canada. Really fortunate to be doing that for about 8 years now. And before us, I'm on the men's side now. Before that, I was the head coach for our women's program for almost 4 years. And then back before that, I was an assistant coach with the men. So our young pro squad's fairly new. I think it's five years old. And on top of that, I coach Corey Connors and Mackenzie Hughes in the PGA Tour and Aaron Cockerell on the European Tour. I've been, fortunate enough to be kind of stuck in high performance for probably the last 15 years and kind of love what I do, count myself as fortunate for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. And Mac and Corey have been on our show, and they're a lot of fun to chat with. So it's nice to tie a little bow on the whole team here by having you on. So.
Yeah, I know they're good dudes, really good guys.
Do you find it as a nice change of pace when you go down and see them? Because you live in Winnipeg, so it's not the greatest winters there. We live in Saskatchewan, we know what it's like. So what's it like to just be able to get away and go and work with those guys?
Yeah, I call it work and put it in quotes when I leave in the middle of winter. My wife's like, she's got to drive up until just recently, drive our kids to hockey and around. I had them in every single thing, sports related. I'd be like somewhere in Florida or Texas or California or Arizona working with Mac and Corey. So she would be getting a little bit pissed off. But for me, it's a great place to get away from in the winter. And then I'm always just thrilled to come home because there's nothing like home. As you guys know, I have a rink in the backyard for my kids. I like to get on there myself, I'm not going to lie. Like I said, I kind of have the best of both worlds. I get lots of heat and I get away a bunch. And then I'm also in Winnipeg because I love hockey. I love being home.
So yeah. Back to the coaching a little bit. With the amateur guys, obviously they're not all based in Winnipeg. So how do you kind of stay in touch with them throughout the year? Is it stuff like this? Is it video sessions on the range? Or are you just more of on the mental side of things because they're already at such a high level?
Yeah, no, honestly, there's none of them in Winnipeg. I'm on the road about 200 plus days a year, mostly with our amateur team and our young pro squad. And then I go to a bunch of PGA Tour events and Korn Ferry Tour events and PGA Tour Canada events, etc. So each player on our amateur team, I'll probably spend somewhere between 50 and 70 days a year with, often in a group, training camps or college visits. And I go to a bunch of the amateur majors in the summertime. And then honestly, with this thing, either on FaceTime or text message or talking to them on the phone, virtually every day, we've gotten this long distance coaching, cause you can't be there every day of the year. You'd love to be, but then I'd be divorced and she's okay, but I really love those kids. But anyway, no, I'm just joking. But when you start with 50 or 70 days a year, you've got a great base. You know, guys, you have a really good relationship, and you know their game, probably better than they do.
Yeah. Do you find that it hasn't, obviously not being able to go and run your camps and things like that when we're dealing with this COVID stuff and no travel? Have you find it's actually been a little bit seamless doing a lot of it via Zoom and FaceTime, those types of things? It's just, you don't get to do the hands-on part.
Yeah. It's been interesting. I'm a Zoom expert. Before I had really never used Zoom at all. Just probably like you guys, had used FaceTime or WhatsApp and app and, done it that way. So now, we are doing a bunch of remote coaching. The thing that really sucks for the players is that they lose their NCAA, their spring season. And four of my guys are seniors. So they were going to graduate this year and possibly turn pro or maybe stay amateur for one more year. And of those four, three are going to go back and repeat. You're allowed to repeat that year if you're NCAA senior. The NCAA allowed that. And then one is just going to graduate and possibly move to pro golf for another year as an amateur. So, you know, to lose those competitions and that, you know, that time to be with them, watching them play and compete and then giving them feedback has kind of sucked for me. But I really feel for those guys because that was something they were looking forward to.
Do you find with coaching these guys and them moving into the pro ranks, things like that, that a lot of them are sticking with you throughout and you get to, you know, work with them all the way through their careers? Or how does that kind of work? Is it based off of how many you can actually maintain yourself?
Well, it's interesting, you know, I never really, it wasn't like, sitting in Winnipeg, Manitoba, you know, 20 years ago, I was like, oh, I want to be a coach on the PGA Tour. That really wasn't the goal. The goal was to help, you know, I really wanted to be the national team coach, and I wanted to coach golf in the Olympics before golf was even in the Olympics. That was kind of one of my goals, and I wanted to help people achieve their goals. So it just kind of morphed into, you know, spending time with players and helping them get better, you know, on our amateur team and then on our young pro squad. And then, you know, then all of a sudden, you know, a few years ago when Mackenzie got there on the PGA Tour, he's like, well, I'd like to you to coach me on the PGA Tour. And I'm like, I don't even know if I can. I'm going to have to ask Golf Canada if they're going to let me, you know, coach you and take time away from the national team and stuff like that. And they, you know, they did say, thankfully, I've been like super fortunate. And they said yes. And the same thing for Corey. He was like, no, why would I try a different coach? You know, I've been working with you for 10 years and now I want to keep working with you. And so I've been, like I said, I've been pretty fortunate, guys.
You mentioned the Olympics. Are you pretty disappointed that they're getting canceled or postponed? I guess postponed probably.
Yeah. Hopefully it's postponed. Don't use the C word anymore.
Sorry. Keep, you slipped out.
Yeah, everything, you know, everything seems to be getting the C word thrown around at it. But, yeah, I was super disappointed. I was in Tokyo in early March. So I went to a site visit in Japan, and that was really just before the COVID-19 stuff happened. And so, and then as soon as I got home, I went to the Players Championship where, and I was there from Monday till, I was supposed to be there till Friday. I was going to watch Corey play his Thursday round and then Mac play his afternoon round Thursday and then come home on Friday. And anyway, that's when, you know, they canceled, it seemed like everything in the world. So
yep.
The Olympics, I am really thrilled that we're Canadian and we took the bull by the horns and said, we were the first country to say, listen, we're not going to go to the Olympics. It's not safe. And I was really proud of the, you know, work behind the scenes, because that was a hard thing to say, you guys, especially with all these other countries and these athletes who have so much invested. But they did the right thing. And so that was a killer for specifically for the athletes. You know, Derek Ingram got to go there in 2016 in Brazil. So I was fortunate and hoping to go back next year and coach the team next year. So, but really feel for those athletes.
Yeah, and the state of Canadian golf is as good as it's ever been.
Yeah, and you know, with the team was shaping up to be, and I know Nick and Mackenzie will want to have something to say about this, and they will going forward. All the guys are. They're just pushing. Everyone's pushing each other to try and get better. But the team was looking like Hads and Corey. And, I mean, those are guys who can win a medal. And then you look at Brooke Henderson, who, you know, if the world rankings on the women's side was a little bit more indicative of reality, I mean, Brooke would be a top three player in the game. She's definitely got a chance to win a gold medal there.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yep. How much of that, you know, of the Team Canada work that you do, whether it's prepping for anything or just training in general, is focused on the mental side of things? I know that you've done a lot of work on the mental side of the golf game, not only from a high level perspective, but for guys like us and trying to even just put ourselves, you know, obviously you're going to have some drinks on the course and just something that we can kind of put into our toolkit to try to reset a little bit if we get on tilt out there, because it happens a lot. So let's talk about high level stuff and then just slowly bring that down to our level stuff.
Very good. Love that question. Never had that question, actually. So this is one of the first times ever. But Yeah, no, I'm strong in that area. You know, I've written a couple books with sports psychologists, friends of mine, and have some stuff coming up out in the fall possibly. So hopefully I'll be able to get back on when I have a book I've been working on released. But anyway, you know, so I'm strong in that area, and we have a fantastic sports psychologist with our national team, Adrienne Leslie Tugid. She's unreal. So, and you know, being good in that area, and when you spend time with athletes, you know, you're constantly subtly working with them on their mental game, or not so subtly, you know, a little bit of both, and, you know, just on positive self-talk, and, you know, and, which I think is a really important one. Cause you know, you guys, when you're playing with each other, you know, if one of you was catting the other one, when he hit a bad shot, you wouldn't just go up and down and go, "You dumbass, why'd you do that? You complete idiot." You know, just, you wouldn't just hammer the guy. You'd say, "Hey, no worries, bro. Let's just go find that and see if we can make a par from there." And I think it's important to be aware of the stuff, the internal dialogue you're having inside your head or under your breath. When the guys aren't around, you're just calling yourself a complete idiot. "I can't believe I effing did that. What a, you know, I'm not even going to get into it." But anyway, so all that self-talk is, you know, and you're just hammering yourself. So I think it's important to be aware of that and just replace it with either neutral stuff or some positive stuff. And, you know, even the simple thing like referring to yourself as bro or pro or dude, as opposed to dumbass or, you know, or, you know, "You stupid prick," you know, any of that stuff. I'm not sure if I can say that on here, but anyway.
Yeah, you can say whatever you want.
But, you know, so just your self-talk and how you refer to yourself is really important. And then one other quick tip, well, two. One is just the ability to take a deep breath in and then emphasize the exhale and have a long, slow exhale. A long, slow exhale will help you relax and refocus and help you play better and calm the nerves down all the time. And so that's really important. Just, you know, breathing a nice big breath, but then a longer, slower exhale will help you. It'll turn off the stress response and allow you to think clearer. And I guess the last thing for you guys is probably to mix in a water in between some of those beers.
Yeah.
We'll see about that. I'm not sure.
I can't even remember the last time I had a water on a golf course.
They sell water?
Yeah. The water fountains in the clubhouse are just filled with rust. So keeping with the kind of the thread of amateur side of things, the you know, outside of high level, more toning it down for us again, I'm not a big warm-up guy. I'm a show and go guy, and I've turned as the clock continues to turn on my life here, I'm starting to run into some like back issues and just things in general. So give us some thoughts on maybe some easy warm-ups, you know, something that you can do mid-round to just stay loose. Because a lot of times you'll warm up the guys that do at the start, and there's not really maybe a little bit of just trying to stay stretched out during the round. Is there any kind of tips that you could provide there?
Yeah, I mean, I think, and I'm older than you guys, so I know it, and golf can beat up the body pretty good. You don't really think that swinging would do that, but it's a really violent swing, or going as hard as you can at in a short period of time, and that takes its toll on the body. So I would make sure the one thing is, even if you don't get to go to the range and hit a ton of golf balls, stretching out or trying to raise your body temperature before you hit and getting a little stretch out would be really important. If you raise that body temperature or get the blood flowing, you know, almost a little bit of a sweat, you're going to probably perform better, and you're not going to hurt yourself. So doing some lunges or squats, you know, when the guys aren't going to see you, because I'm sure they're going to chirp you if they see that, but, you know, it would be important. That would help you, you know, get almost sweating or the blood flowing. And then, you know, holding two clubs and swinging them slowly, both left-handed and right-handed, really slowly, you know, getting a maximum amount of rotation back and through both ways. And then, you know, just anything that's going to allow you to get a bit of sweat on, or to get, you know, to get burning. And that's why I like lunges or squats, because all of a sudden after like 5 or 10 of those, you're like, "Holy crap, my legs are sore," or the blood's flowing. So that's going to be that, and swinging those two or three clubs together, left and right hand, I think is a simple thing to get going. And then doing that sort of stuff during the round, you know, when the other guys are hitting, you know, even as much as squatting down on the ground, as low as you can get while you're watching or reading your putt. Again, it's stretching out your back, it's stretching out your legs and your hips while someone else is putting, or when you're reading your putt. Again, things that are going to help you. And those are just, those are quick, you know, low hanging fruit things.
Yeah, maybe a little Camille Vajegas on the green. Really get down and read some putts.
Yeah, throw a couple push ups at the boys, you know.
Don't even pull anything.
I did want to circle back just a little bit. We were talking about, you know, tips and things like that. One of the things that you're doing, obviously being confined to your house and areas, we got to talk about the garage series videos that you've been rolling out, including one in particular. And that was when you had the opportunity to, when you mix in the hockey and then you went out to your driveway and started hammering clappers into your net. What kind of level of hockey did we play here?
You know, I played, well, I mean, back then, I'm way older. It was referred to as tier one, but I guess it was, you know, triple A hockey until I got to be, you know, 15 or 16, you know, and as you guys know, the older I get, the better I was. But, and I had three older brothers, and one of them actually was a, actually two of them were very good hockey players. My oldest brother sucked. We always hammer him on that. But anyway, one of my brothers went out to Estevan and made the team there back when they were a really good team in the SJ. This is a long time ago. We're quite a bit older. And then didn't like being away from home. He also had an opportunity to go down to UND and possibly play down there. And so he was a really good, you know, player. And I grew late, you know, and so, you know, now I'm almost 6'3 and 215 pounds. I'm like, geez, where was that when I was 16 or 17, when I was the smallest guy in the team and had no muscle on me and not a hair in my entire body. So I was a little bit better younger. And then, you know, around 17, I realized, hey, I'm competing with guys with full beards and I don't have one hair on my body, including my head. I'm getting killed up here. I think I'm going to focus on golf.
Yeah. Well, I can vouch for myself in that it took me 34 years to start growing facial hair. So I'm taking every advantage of this quarantine to try to grow a beard out. So,
nice.
But yeah, those grad series videos have been fantastic watches. I mean, it provides some insight in a very short period of time and allows people to just kind of stay active. And I mean, I've been watching them. I don't want to lie here and say that I've been doing lots of them. I've just been watching them.
I'm
glad to hear somebody is watching him. And you know, the idea is that it's a tough time and people are at home, and you know, to give them some things to think about that hopefully might help them a little bit with their golf game and have a little bit of fun doing it. And my garage is kind of grungy and dark, and there's, you know, there's shovels everywhere on the wall because I live in Winnipeg, and so I thought I'd just have some fun with it.
Yeah,
I watched that one today, and that the part about keeping your head still throughout, perfect for me. I realized I'm lifting my head way up right off the get-go every time, and I just gotta keep her down.
And if this is your head, it's attached to your spine. You know, if that spine's going, you know, people say your head's lifting up, but really your whole body's lifting up. And if we can maintain it, keep that similar, you're going to hit it so much more solid and probably have a hell of a lot more fun too. So,
I mean, these guys are in trouble if I start hitting it more solid. So,
yeah, whatever you say.
I think you need to work on the mental side of things. Just make sure you're taking notes on the first part of this.
Yeah. Oh, I was writing that part down for sure.
No, I saw you violently scribbling. So, I mean, all of us, we've played with a lot of good golfers. We went to a PGA Tour event last year. We know there's a difference between scratch, good amateur golfers, and PGA Tour players. But from your perspective as coaching them, how big is that difference, and where is the difference between the really good scratch golfer at our course versus a pro golfer, or even a very good scratch amateur superstar versus a PGA pro?
Yeah, good question, because like the scratch at a club in Manitoba or Saskatchewan or anywhere in the world, he's a damn good player who might shoot under par a couple times and over par a few times, but he's in that range of somewhere between one or two under and maybe three or four over almost all the time, and you're like, geez, that guy's really good. And then you got a guy like on our national amateur team, like a Noah Steele, or a couple of years ago when you had Jared Dutoit on our national amateur team, and they're like a +5 or +6 handicap. And that means they're at their home course, and every time they tee it up, you know, they're shooting somewhere between 2 under and 7 under, and you're just like, that's a step up, right? Yeah. Like, that's a real step up. And you know, sometimes they're shooting 8 or 9 under at their home course, and you're like, wow. And then you see that player, and you go to the PGA Tour, and you're like, okay, there's even a difference there between a guy who's a +5 or +6 handicap and somebody in the PGA Tour. And I think the big difference there is on the PGA Tour, they're just so consistent. They make mistakes, but their mistakes are pars because they clean it up with their short game and their putting. And even when they're off, you know, they take advantage of the par fives and some short fours and shoot 2 or 3 under on a bad day. And the courses they play on tour, as you guys seen, they're hard. They're long. You know, the rough's long, the greens are firm, and they're long. Like the par threes, I mean, there's a lot of par threes, 200 to 245. To me, that's a short par four in Manitoba.
It's sickening, yeah.
Par fives like that in Manitoba, but into the wind. But anyway, so the difference is pretty significant. And I just think also mentally, though, is probably the biggest difference. They just, on the tour, they have that quiet inner confidence. They have that belief. And even when they're off, they just stick to it. They stick to it. They stick to it. And then boom, at the end of the round, oh, it was a terrible day, but I shot 2 under today on a hard course.
Yeah. Just building off of that, what do you find is the difference in even just like the coachability of, you know, potentially someone that you're helping around Winnipeg, you know, at your local course, if you're just helping out, as compared to the coachability of, you know, your PGA guys now, what is kind of the difference there? Is it more fine tuning, or is it just, you know, willingness to learn that's got them to where they are?
Well, the guys on tour, like a Mac Hughes, I mean, he's literally left no stone unturned in a quest to become a PGA Tour player and a PGA Tour winner and move up the world rankings. Like, I'm talking, this guy is doing so much right, it's unreal. And I knew that even as an amateur and a young pro. I was like, Mac, you know, even when you get to the PGA Tour, there's going to be guys who can learn from the habits and routines that you have. They're just so dialed in those habits and routines. So that's one thing I think is that's really impressive about tour players. I also forgot your question there, dude. I don't know if I
that's all right. I was just talking about the coachability of the guys.
Well, they're really coachable, but they've got a BS factor on the PGA Tour. You can't BS them. You know, I'm standing up. There's a difference between me doing videos and showing people stuff and talking how brilliant I am when it's just my phone there. But when I got Mac Hughes or Corey Connors in front of me and they're hitting it bad and they look back at me, they're not looking. They want to know right then and there, you know, and you got to be able, you know, you got to be able to help them or understand what's going on like that. Whereas standing in front of a video camera and telling people anything you want, that works, you know, that can work, but it's not reality. And you know, the great thing about those guys is I've got long-term relationships and we're working on, basically we've been working on the same stuff for like 3, 4, 5 years. I mean, in Corey's case, we're working in more turn with the lower body. If his lower body turns more, he gets more behind the golf ball, more pressure to his back foot, makes it easier for him to move into the ball and hit really hard, accurate draws. We've been doing that for 2 or 3 years. And so it's the same stuff, whereas we're not, you know, we're not just throwing stuff on the wall and hoping it sticks, or we're not hoping, or, you know, we've got a plan and we've been working that plan. He's getting better and better and better. And it's very similar with Mac. We've been working on, you know, having just a little bit better rhythm, you know, swinging to the left to create a bit of a fade pattern for him, you know, for so long that, you know, we just keep doing a lot of the similar things. And again, he's getting incrementally better. And I would say 0.5% or 0.25%, not a lot, but a little better.
Yeah, that's when you're that good, it's hard to get much better.
It's fine tuning.
Yeah, the days of getting 10% better are over for those guys. If they get 0.5% better, they can go from 100 in the world to 40, and that's a lot of money.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think even for yourself and your portfolio of athletes that you're coaching, it allows you to keep yourself probably a little fresh too, right? With having the different skill levels where you can kind of stay sharp on those types of things where, you know, Corey and Mac, you've been working on, like you said, the same 2 or 3 things. If you're strictly a, you know, a professional coach, PGA coach, you might be dealing with 7 guys and they're all just these little tweaks. Whereas as a national coach, you have the ability to kind of stay sharp on all areas, right?
Well, yeah, it's also, there's some credibility. You know, I coached Corey and Mack when they were worse than you guys, you know?
I don't know.
not necessarily you guys, but I mean, our guys are amateur. I don't know, maybe you guys are better than you're telling me, but the guys are our amateur team. You know, Corey was and Mack were both on our junior team. So I've seen them, you know, over the course of the, like 8-10 years get a lot better. And so, you know, I've seen them make just a really nice progression. And I know it takes time. And everyone's looking for the quick fix. Like if I had the magic pixie dust and a big drum of it, you think I'd be sprinkling it on anybody other than myself? I mean, I would be sharing it, that's for sure. I'd be out on the PGA Tour making $5 million a year. It's about hard work and day-to-day habits, the boring stuff. It's doing the little things right that no one wants to do for a long period of time.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's get, we'll get into one more before we get rapid fire here. So, straightforward, if you had to pick three people in your ultimate foursome to play golf with, any three people, whether it's golfers, entertainers, celebrities, you name it, who are you playing with and where are you playing other than, well, maybe we'll see. We'll see if it's Augusta or not, but other than that.
Oof. Okay, well, I've been fortunate enough. I've been to Augusta several times. Corey's been there twice. So I played in the tournament twice, and I've been to the, and Mac's been there once. So I've been to Augusta probably 15 or 20 times. So I've never played it, but been in the property, and it's, I just want to sleep there. Never mind golf it, play it. But I'm going to go for playing it. You know, probably my favorite course. It's between Cabot Links and Port Rush. So it'd be between one of those two. Let's go Cabot Links because it's a Canadian podcast and it's unreal. Have you guys been or no?
I have, and I make sure these guys know it all the time.
And you guys should go together, you know, with some buddies. Maybe you guys don't like each other enough, but you should definitely go.
Yeah. I think it's more the, we might need to fundraise to get ourselves there.
Because it is incredible. It's the most beautiful place in the world. And to go with friends, you know, and play 36 a day a couple days would be unreal. So anyway, Cabot Links. And then who would it be with? Oh, I'm a big hockey guy too, you know. I should say my dad and my brothers, but that's what everyone says. So if we're going to go famous people, maybe the great one. I'd love to play with Wayne. I hear he loves the Jars as well. So Wayne would be cool. And then maybe, I really loved Tom Watson growing up. He was unreal. Someone famous. Who would be fun? You know, how about Brett Hull? Imagine getting him on the golf course.
That's a good one.
Yeah, although, I don't think he'd make it though. He'd be so hammered he'd only get 9 holes in, Brett Hull.
Yeah, I was gonna say 7.
I don't think he's mixing waters in between drinks.
Yeah. I don't know. It might be Corey Mack and Taylor Pendrith. Those guys would be fun to play with too.
Yeah, for sure.
Not bad. Yep.
Yeah, we I was at Taylor's win at the 1932 by Bateman Open this year.
Oh, sweet. Yeah, that's cool. Good. Yeah, that's his first win in the PGA Tour Canada too. That was a good one to be at.
Yeah, it was. He was bombing it that week.
Yeah, he's impressive. He's a guy who will, my personal opinion is he'll be on the PGA Tour within a year or two, and he's a guy who's going to win every year and has the ability to win majors out there.
Yeah,
nice.
Very nice. All right, Harvey, you want to kick us off with rapid fire?
Sure. What's in your bag for clubs?
I'm a ping guy. I just moved it. I had a ping club here. So I've got a ping everything head to toe. I love their stuff. I'm a Titleist golf ball player. I use a ping, a putter from the lab there that they built for me specifically. It's a Ping Zing, but it's black and it's from the tour department. I mean, I just want to fall in love with that thing. It's the best thing in the world. So I personally think, you know, this is a non-paid advertisement. I feel like they make the best equipment in the market. And if I was using my own money to buy golf equipment, I'd buy Ping every single time. I think they make the best stuff.
Well, no free ads, so we'll edit that out. But
love it.
Next one, how many career hole-in-ones do you have?
Just a mere one hole-in-one at Kildonan Park Municipal Golf Course in Winnipeg, maybe just 10 minutes down that way. It was 150-yard par three over the railroad tracks when I was 19. And so not in a tournament or anything like that, which is just one. Kind of sucks, but.
Hey, that's all right. We got two between the four of us then.
All right. I'm saying that's you then, eh?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I've been to Cabot, and I have the ace, so these guys have a rough go of it every week.
Love it.
Speaking of local courses, a bit of a three-parter here. Your favorite course in Canada, Saskatchewan, and then your top five in Manitoba.
Five.
Or one. You know what? We'll just go one of each.
Stop. I was going to get the notepad on here.
We're trying to spread out. We're a Saskatchewan. Oh, you did five, so we did. We're trying to get in Manitoba.
I thought we did top five, so maybe we plan like a golf trip around five in Manitoba is what I was.
Oh, that's not bad.
Who better to ask?
I'll see if I can come up with, you know, five in Manitoba. Let's go within Canada. Yeah, I've already said Cabot. It's unreal, but let's go with something other than Cabot. Let's go Marine Drive in Vancouver. It's a really nice old style course. I don't know if you guys have been out there, but it's a really nice old course. So let's throw some love out there. In Saskatchewan, where do we play those Titleist Cup matches? You know, I honestly think Saskatchewan and Manitoba are one big exact same province. You know, I've always said this to we used to play the Titleist Cup against the pros in Saskatchewan every year. So the top pros in Manitoba versus the top in Saskatchewan. And we'd have a, you know, we drink a lot. We compete a lot and just have a blast. I just think the people are exactly the same, but I'll say, is it Riverside?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Riverside, yep. My favorite course in Saskatchewan. Okay. And in Manitoba, I'll say I grew up on a small rural course, about an hour, a little less than an hour, a 9-hole course at that time that turned into an 18-hole course called Sandy Hook Golf Course. It's in Sandy Hook, Manitoba. Just because I grew up playing, you know, 36 or 45 holes a day, just going around and around. And Jim Doyle won the Canadian Amateur in 1968. He was like a mentor, second father to me, and played the Canadian Tour, was a tremendous player. But so that's one of my favorite courses in Manitoba. And then I feel like the best courses in Manitoba are probably Elmhurst, because it's just a great 100-year-old Donald Ross layout. And then I'll say Hecla Island, which is up north, and it's got a bunch of holes in the water. It's spectacular. You guys, if you get to Manitoba, you got to play there. Really like Corrie Oaks, another one that's just outside of Winnipeg. You guys should play. So there's three. Pine Ridge Golf Club. It's right beside Elmhurst. They're both Ross courses, although Elmhurst has really kept the Donald Ross design. Elmhurst is kind of, Pine Ridge has kind of blown theirs up. So there's four Manitoba. Or do you want me to come up with one other real good one in Manitoba?
You got five. I wrote them all down. You got Sandy Hook, Elmhurst, Hecla Island, Corrie Oaks, and Pine Ridge.
There you go, boys. How's that?
Easy. Now I just gotta map it out and see how many kilometers we gotta drive to get this all in one trip.
How many beers is it gonna take you to get to all those courses?
Yeah, how many beers?
All right. Next one. What's your favorite movie?
I love Slapshot. It's a great movie. You know, I'm older than you guys, so that's a great movie. What else do I love? The one with Mel Gibson, with all the killing. Was that?
Braveheart.
Braveheart. Yeah, Braveheart. Oh, nice. I love that movie. I can watch that over and over.
Took us a long time to get that. And straightforward. Jeez.
Sorry, guys.
Yeah, jeez. All right, let's see. What's your top Team Canada moment?
Golf or hockey? Golf? Okay, golf. Probably we finished a couple years ago in Japan. I guess it was 2012. The team was Corey Connors, Taylor Pendrith, and Adam Svensson at the World Amateur Team Championships. And we finished second to the United States. We won a silver medal. But in the last hole, we were tied. And we had – it was three-play, two-count. And the third player, Taylor, beat up on I think it was Denny McCarthy, who's a PGA Tour player. And yep. So we had, if it was a tie, we were going to win the World Am. And in the last hole, Corey hit this 330-yard drive right down the middle and then had only like a sand wedge in. Bryson DeChambeau, his playing partner, just hit a big weak flare into the right rough, way into the right rough. And then from the rough, he hit an 8-iron to like 10 feet or 12 feet, but a big swing and breaking putt. And Corey had a sandwich and hit it right at the flag at 10 out of 10. But I guess the adrenaline was pumping and it went a little too far onto the back fringe. And Bryson buries his putt. Corey misses. We lose the world down by one, but to the U.S., a pretty good team. It was Bryson DeChambeau, Danny McCarthy, and what's that guy from Texas? Bo Hostler as well.
Hmm. Wow. Yeah.
So,
yeah,
that's a, I mean, everyone's that's a total familiar battle. With DeChambeau now, but when you guys saw him in 2012, were you guys like, what is this guy doing?
Yeah, you know, he was always a nice guy, actually, Bryson. A bit odd. No, not a little bit odd. How about a lot odd? But really good player and a really good dude. So, you know, you can kind of, and quite scientific, really anal about the way he goes about things, but tough to argue with how it's turned out for him. Like, really a great player. And, you know, even when I see him at PGA Tour events still, even though he's got an entourage of 12 people around him, still a good dude and a really impressive player.
Well, yeah, we'll see how it goes this year now that he's a small linebacker. So
he was posting numbers. I thought I saw a tweet of his that he had 138 club speed or something like that.
Yeah. Do you think there's any, I know this, hopefully you'll edit this out, but do you think there's any steroids going on there? Or no?
I don't
know. We're not editing it out, but.
We're not editing
it out. This is edited right now, eh?
Yeah.
His live.
I mean, he posted that on Instagram. Like, he's thick now, and it's difficult to put that much actual muscle on. I can see you just binge eating, but I mean, he's girthed up. Yeah.
Well, he looks huge. But you know, Danny McCarthy as well, who's on that team. Danny's a fantastic guy. Just, you know, salt of the earth guy. So they were good dudes. So unfortunately, we had to lose, and to the U.S. no less. But that was probably my favorite Team Canada moment.
Thanks.
Next one. What was your first car?
I drove a 1971 Chevrolet Impala. Like, this thing was an absolute tank, guys. It, you know, you just look at the accelerator and the gas gauge went down to almost nothing. It was an absolute machine. I ran into a bus on the way to U of M.
I was just going to say, safest vehicle in the world.
It was absolutely – I did more damage to the bus than my 71 Impala. That thing was a –
I believe it.
You still see some of those driving around Moose Jaw.
That's great.
What's the weirdest thing you've ever seen on a golf course, whether that's in competition, whether that's coaching someone, whether that's just playing with buddies, just something that's just flat out weird?
I got a funny story for you guys. Quick, I'll try and make it quick, but a funny story about Brooke Henderson. The first time I was Brooke Henderson got on our national amateur team, I was still coaching the women's team. And so the first tournament I ever took her to was called the Spirit International, just outside of Houston at Whispering Pines, an unreal golf course, one of the best in the world. So she's like 13, and I'm there with Garrett Rank and Mackenzie Hughes and Taylor Kemp, blah, blah. It's a team event. So I don't really know Brooke. I just know she's unreal. I've watched her play, and like, oh, she's going to be unreal. But I'm just keeping my mouth shut, getting to know her and stuff like that. So the turn starts, and on each tee, it's a really wealthy, you know, tournament. And each tee, they've got these two big drums, one full filled with soft drinks, right to the top, and the other one filled with Gatorades and waters. You guys wouldn't enjoy this tournament. But anyway, so I'm watching her play. I've got other players to watch, but I'm watching every two or three holes. And every time I see her, she's got a Sprite in her hands. And she's just walking around, you know, drinking a Sprite. And so a couple holes later, she's, you know, I see her polish off another Sprite. And then a few more holes, I see her polish off another Sprite. And like, I'm a high-performance coach. You know, I coach our national team. Like, we, you know, and I'm thinking to myself, I mean, she's really good. I can't believe how good she is and how bad her golf clubs are. She's just got the cheapest Walmart set of clubs you've ever seen. But I'm just like, I don't think I've ever seen anyone drink so many Sprites on the golf course. Like, she's setting a world record for Sprites drinking around the golf. So I'm not going to say anything, though. She's just kicking the crap out of these college girls, and she's 13, like the best college girls in the U.S., So finally, after the third round, I'm like sitting having a post-round interview like I did the first two rounds with her, but I'm really just trying to learn and keep my mouth shut, But I said to her, hey, Brooke, you really like Sprite, hey? And she's like, oh, yeah, DI. Everyone calls me. I love Sprite DI, and they're free out there. They got them on every hole. And so I was just like, oh, you know, yeah, they just, and I didn't say anything. I didn't say, hey, don't, you know, let's take it easy in the Sprites. I was like, I didn't say like, hey, let's take it down from a dozen to six around or anything. Like, I just shut my mouth. But after finally on the plane ride home, I'm like, hey, and I knew I was moving to the men's side, but hey, Brookster, you know, you may want to, you know, limit the Sprites to like maybe three per side going forward. And but she loved the fact that they're free and they're on every single tee box, and she's just taking advantage of a great deal being a real Canadian.
Yeah, well, yeah. And you got to remember too, she's 13, so she's just like, I'm getting something free, and I love sugar.
Yeah,
and I just it's my world right now. Well, we might as well stick with the pop one. One of you guys got it.
Are you a Coke or a Pepsi guy?
Oh, Coke all day long. Pepsi's crap, boys. Come on.
Whoa, yeah. Absolutely.
Thank you. That's the best Coke answer we've ever had.
We had Cabot. We had Aces. And then you had to go and break my heart. Yeah, for sure. All right, last rapid fire, but I do have a follow-up question that's, I guess, a rapid fire, but not really. If you could be one of these two guys, who would you be? Sidney Crosby or Mike Weir?
If I could beat?
B.
Oh, Sidney Crosby all day long. Not even compare. I like Mike. Mike's a great guy. You know, I have really, you know, really ton of respect from the best Canadian golfer ever on the men's side. I mean, Brooke will probably surpass him, but I mean, Sid the Kid, come on, boys. Why even? I'm a Canadian.
I told those guys that it was an easy one.
Well, I mean, you just said that Mike's the best Canadian golfer ever, potentially. And Sid isn't the best. Well, he might, I don't want to get down. I don't want to go down that road, but I thought it might be a difficult question for you being, you know, into the golf side of things, but we know you're a hockey guy. So I thought you might hesitate a little bit.
No, Sid's he's a champ. I love the guy.
Yeah. Okay. I did have a couple, just another question, just kind of going back to the Olympic stuff and just kind of curious, you said you're in Brazil for those Olympics. Just your thoughts on that experience, what it was like there, you know, if you have any stories that resonate with you, just even about being in the country or whether it's the athletes, coaches, village, those types of things. Like, we're always interested in those types of events. And I mean, that's probably a life-changing experience for you.
Yeah, that was a dream come true for me, like probably the pinnacle of my coaching career, just because I spent a lot of time and a lot of my own money trying to get educated so that if golf ever got in the Olympics, I'd have an opportunity to be the coach, you know, and before golf was even the Olympics, I knew it was coming. I had some information available to me that made me feel like it was going to be in the Olympics. And I really wanted to be a guy who was, you know, involved with that. I love that. And I've got two kind of cool stories from the Olympics. The first one is that after the last round, I went out with Graham's caddy, Ray Whitney, and we were just having a couple beers after the fourth round, and we got tickets to the 100-meter dash final, which, you know, was unreal. You know, go down there and with all the athletes. So sitting there with Ray, having a couple beers and watching the 100 meters and watching Usain Bolt win that 100 meters, but also Andre DeGrasse to winning a silver, and I think it was a silver he won. And just being so close to it was probably one of the highlights of my sporting career. It was, you know, just being there. Also was at Sochi for the Olympics, and I watched Canada play Finland there. But anyway, which was really cool. And the other one, I guess, from the Olympics was Graham and Hernsey were unreal guys, great guys to work with and a lot of fun. But at the same time, Mackenzie Hughes, I'd been coaching for 8 or 9 years, that same week he won on the web.com tour. And that took him from being a web.com tour player to a PGA tour player. And I would say that was even probably bigger for Derek Ingram, just because of how much time, you know, Mac and I had spent together, really, you know, helping build his career and his game, you know, and we saw him right from when he was a 16 or 17 year old junior to, to getting a PGA Tour card and really, you know, achieving a dream. So that was also something that was really special. And he called me on the phone in the arena when I was watching the 100 meter, 100 yard dash. And, you know, just said, Hey man, we did it. We're going to the PGA Tour. I can't believe we're going to the PGA Tour. So that was a really, you know, something I'll never forget.
Yeah. That'll stick with you for sure.
One last thing about the Olympics, you guys, one last thing. Also, during the event, I went to, a volleyball game in the stadium there. And, you know, it was such an unreal atmosphere. And I sat down in the athletes area and, you know, in between they're playing music. It was just a real party. At the same time I had an extra seat and, I can't remember the name of the female tennis player who's a absolute smoke show, Janie Bouchard. So I'm sitting there watching. I don't know if you edit that out as well, please. But I, so we're not wrong. I know, I guess I'm not wrong. But anyway, so she comes down, I didn't know this, and actually just taps me on the shoulder and says, "Oh, would you mind if I sit by you for the volleyball game?" I'm kind of like looking at her going, blah, blah, blah. No, I'd be unbelievable. Like I hardly even talk. But she was one of the nicest people, most down to earth and friendly and you know, really warm. And I mean, she didn't have to get Derek Ingram. She just probably thought I was some slug there watching the game, but she was super nice. And that was also really cool because at that point she was a superstar. And like I said, you know, pretty cool.
You should have started with that one because that'd be my number one story, personally.
Yeah.
You got that. One more came to my mind real quick. Since you're from Winnipeg, they had the Jets left. Are you a Jets fan or did you abandon ship when they left in 96?
Oh, easy. No, huge, huge Jets fan. You know, when the Jets left originally, I took a bit of a break from NHL hockey. I was pretty disappointed that they went to Phoenix and you know, the Moose, you know, it wasn't the same, guys, with the Moose, especially when you grew up in hockey. My uncle was an assistant coach with the Jets and played for the Jets and played in the NHL, you know, for a few years and was in the American Hockey League. He actually won the scoring race in the American Hockey League. So we kind of have hockey in our blood. My son's a prospect with the Red Deer Rebels in the Western Hockey League. He's protected by them. So we have a little bit of hockey in the blood. So when they left, I got a little bit sad. But since I've been back and you've got two boys at home, you live in Manitoba, I mean, what else are you going to do? It's a long winter and we just love the Jets. We love hockey and we really love the Jets.
Well, that's good.
Cool.
All right. Well, that's all we got for you, Derek. We appreciate you joining the show. For those of you that don't follow Derek on Twitter or Instagram yet, it's @DIngramGolf on both platforms. So feel free to follow him. We appreciate you joining us, and it's been a blast.
Yeah, no, that's awesome, guys. Good luck with what you're doing. It looks like you guys have a lot of fun doing what you're doing and are doing really well with it. So thanks very much for having me on.
Big thanks to DI for joining the boys. A lot of takeaways from that one. We'll highlight a couple. I mean, people just listen to it. So our favorite takeaways. I know Harv has the Brooke thing.
Yeah, I mean, that was like, How many Sprites did she drink in nine holes? Like,
three aside, I thought he said.
Yeah.
Or like, she had three at the turn. And he said
I think he said maybe only drink four or something like that next time. Like,
yeah.
But like
hates,
they're free.
They're free. And he hates Pepsi, which I was actually amazed, though, that he picked so quickly Sidney Crosby over Mike Weir.
Yeah, that was a little surprising.
Well, when you ran the question by us, I said it was a no-brainer.
Yeah, but we both picked Weir. And you pick Crosby. He could pick Crosby. I mean, he's the only Canadian to win the Masters. He's the best Canadian male golfer of all time. Sidney Crosby's, yes, hockey's better. He's not the best hockey player of all time, Canadian. Top five ever, for sure, in a more popular sport.
But
if you're a golf person and you love golf, you would want to be the best person for your country ever. That's just my thought.
Yeah, but Derek's a big hockey fan too, so.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I'm just the way I'm looking at that is like you have their exact life versus one versus the other.
Yes.
And to have Sidney Crosby's career and life, don't get me wrong, be great, but like that's a lot of toll taken on your body.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas like Mike Weir, or you could give me any golfer, I'm probably picking a golfer.
And there's less, there is less spotlight on you as a golfer, almost, like, especially a Canadian golfer. Like, yeah, I'm watching the MJ documentary, like,
you don't
want. I'm
be
not
that.
Comparing Crosby to MJ by any means, but you to have that spotlight on you all the time,
yeah.
Like
Crosby, MJ, I mean, it's not the same, but it's up there for that guy. And don't get me wrong, I'm pretty sure I'd rather have Crosby's bank account, but
yeah,
not just that much worse. Mike's.
Oh, I bet you it's quite a bit worse.
It's yeah, but relatively speaking,
yeah. Like, once you get to a certain level, it's like.
Yeah.
Once you're wet, you're wet.
Yeah. That's a good way to put it. You can't get more wet.
Once you're
wet.
Dead, you're dead.
You can't get more wet. But
that's a
good
one.
But like, just, I just think like any golf, maybe that's me just preferring it. Like, you could say, would you rather have Roger Sloan's life? And I'd probably say Sloan.
Yeah. Well,
because he gets to golf every day.
I also asked him for some tips on stretching and mental side of things. We've played two. We taped that interview last week,
before
our two rounds. Let's put it that way. And I did not use a whole lot of anything that he told us. So that's my takeaway. I'm gonna probably have to. You know what? I shouldn't say that. I took a few deep breaths.
Well, I don't know.
I'm working on stretching, but.
I've showed up basically as we were teeing off both rounds, and I've hit two of my best shots on one in the past 3 years.
That's
no
right.
Stretching. Like last year, I was the guy showing up 40 minutes early, hitting the range, maybe playing a couple practice holes, and this year just literally sprinting to the first tee and just swinging the club and hit two great tee shots on one.
You did.
I got home today, and my wife's like, oh, how'd you play today? I was like, oh, I beat my last round by one. She's like, oh, well, people are thinking about lots of things right now, you know, like COVID and all that. And I was like, oh, thanks. Yeah,
that's what
that's
I was
why.
Thinking of. Yeah, that's what I was thinking of. You're right.
But hey, another excuse to add onto the pile.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what my excuse to why I got six shots worse was.
My
wind.
Eye. The wind. Your eye.
Yeah. I got a puffy eye. Not quite sure what it is.
It's pink eye. We know what it is. It's pink eye.
Yeah.
Just little do you guys know, I blinked all over your microphones before you got here.
Yeah, just wiping your eye goop with them.
All right, well, that wraps up episode 114. We better get out of here. Hope everyone enjoyed the sound. We're back in studio, so some great sound this episode. We were so excited that we decided to put together a over 90-minute episode for you. We'll be back next week, episode 115. We're not really sure where we're going to head with that one, so stay with us and we'll see where we're going. So maybe a little surprise in store. But until then, it's time for us to hit the clubhouse. Change had much to say.